Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Our tech attorney, Rich Honan, pays us a visit, as he does most months, with some thoughts on headlines from the business world and beyond. He helps us sort out all of this stuff. And Rich Honan is with Phillips Lytle LLP, where he is the partner in charge of the Albany office. And it's always a great pleasure to welcome Rich back to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Happy New Year to you.
And to you.
A delight to have you with us once again. One of the things we wanted to talk about today is, I guess it's perception. It's one of those, I don't know, we always say this about polls, you don't know what you can read into them, what you can read into them. But perhaps this shows our polarization as a people and as a time and as a culture. But there's a recent poll out about ranking of the presidents, and some people in the same poll say President Obama, best president, and then worst president. And those numbers are pretty much the same, oddly enough.
Right. Presumably not the same people, but the but about the same amount, you know, 28% or so. Now, it was a Fox News poll, so take that for what it's worth.
They commissioned it?
They commissioned it, but they have a Democrat and a Republican polling agency that do it, according to the poll facts. And but the interesting thing was, 28% of the people thought that Obama was either the worst or one of the worst, and 22% thought he was either the best or one of the best.
Yeah,
and in the business world, we have to often read data and make decisions based on it. And you're always looking for trends, and it would be difficult to find a trend from that. But it did get us thinking, you know, what makes a bad president?
Let me ask, before we delve into that, let me just throw this out, which is, I remember a long time ago that Phil Donahue, the famed television host, Phil Donahue, who is no relation, believe it or not, but
I thought you changed your name to in homage.
but I was always, I still am a great admirer of Phil Donahue. I think he was a revolutionary in this business, and certainly in television talk show host. And but I remember when I was in high school, I mentored with him for a day.
Wow.
And one of the things he said to me is, look, at the end of the day, if the mail comes in and half the people like you and half the people hate you, you're doing your job.
That's probably true.
And so when you showed me this poll, I thought, well, okay, isn't that sort of where we are in this? Some people would say, okay, that's polarization. Other people will say, well, maybe that's where you want to be.
Maybe, except that when you're measuring it against where, for example, where he started, right? So he starts, you know, when you start with 73%, you know, believing you're honest, and now you're down to 48 or 49% believing you're honest, you know, there you can derive a trend from that. Now, if it had been flat throughout, Then I think I would take your point that, you know, half the people like it, half the people don't.
Yeah.
To be fair.
So you look at the movement.
Yeah, I think, and that's why we look at any kind of data, right? Is for trends, and, you know, what are we missing? What should we see from this?
But you could, I mean, we were talking about a poll this morning, which was, I believe, a New York Times poll, although I could be wrong on that, which showed that that Governor Christie, you know, his numbers went from 70 to 40%,
right.
44%. Well, duh. You know, okay. Well, that makes sense. And the president has had a pretty bruising fall with the rollout of Obamacare.
Right.
So I guess can you look at a poll? This is a much different poll than it will be in 10 years when he's out of office.
Well, and that's one of the takeaways. Certainly, although Obama, certainly the Christie decline, or whether you call it a blip or a decline, was more precipitous because it was transaction based.
Right.
And while the Obama decline, to me, is kind of more culturally based. People are starting to understand his way of governing, and some people don't approve. But it's certainly unfair to gauge a president while she or he, hopefully at some point there'll be a she, is still in office. And the rule of thumb seems to be that most presidents who are not well-liked while in office, you know, seem to do better. afterwards. And one of the best recent example, I think, is George Bush 41, George Herbert Walker Bush, who was, you know, pilloried pretty badly, and has started to look a little bit better, in retrospect for some of the decisions. It's interesting when you have a president like Obama who has gotten what some people, what I believe, has been, you know, pretty good treatment from the press. Which way will that trend go? When that wears off, when the adulation kind of wears off, which way will he be viewed, you know, 10 years from now? I personally think he's only, as you look at him more clearly and look at where we are in 10 years, I feel like that's going to go down.
Really?
Yeah.
No, because there is something, because you mentioned Bush 41, and right. and certainly Jimmy Carter would go into that category as well.
Looking better
as president, but also you don't know how much factored in is of what they do in the post presidency. Carter obviously has had
right.
an impact. I think George Bush Sr. Certainly with his humanitarian work, teaming up with Bill Clinton and the
right.
work that they have done, has done a tremendous amount. So when you look at that, I don't know how much of it can be separated from presidential to post presidential.
I think that's fair. I think what's interesting in the when you look at it too is when you look at it in terms of categories of, you know, what you're good at, what you're bad at. It's always interesting to compare the president you're talking to, you know, kind of historically.
Sure.
And I think, in the old days, most presidents didn't do anything after being president, right?
Right.
A few notable examples. But most presidents, in fact, there were, you know, a John Adams type who actually had his best days before he was president, right? And then he ends up in retrospect looking worse as president. So you didn't have as much of an afterlife in those days. On the Obama side, I think you're seeing a lot of, the personal credibility seems to be on every poll, right? When you're on presidents throughout the ages, personal credibility, integrity is always big, and then just general effectiveness, and then the state of their administration. And I think when you compare Obama on that, you kind of go across a whole swath of presidents.
Doesn't it seem, though, whether you look at president, and I would start, and maybe this is unfair, but I would start with President Clinton and say President Clinton, President Bush, President Obama, that we have hit a time of just evisceration.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we are out for blood, from whatever other side you're on, and that it isn't going to be, you're going to people say, well, look, President Bush was the worst president we ever had, and they'll just be eviscerated. And then you're going to say that, people are going to say that about Obama, people will say that he was great, and people will say, my point is that it's still going to be very polarized. There is this, you know, get him mentality. And where do we get away from that so that we can actually, because we were not there yet. We're not quite there yet. We're almost there. We're not quite there yet. But with President Obama, you know, next year you're going to start hearing the word legacy, right?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
going to be the legacy.
Well, I think they're already thinking about that. And
I'm sure they are. But I mean, you know, we as the press will start picking
up.
I
think his legacy has been set, and it's going to be Obamacare. But I hear what you're saying, and it's funny because we were talking about George Bush 41.
Yeah.
And whether this has to do with his rise in popularity post-presidency or not, I think you could make the argument he was maybe the last of the kind of patrician type, the kind of guy who you felt like he could have a drink with Tip O'Neill was tough, but maybe it just was of an era where at a certain level it was non-personal. Where you felt like he could, I felt like he was the last one. Now, of course, Clinton, you know, also reached across the aisle, I think, you know, pretty well. But after that, I think you're right. I think that, you know, Clinton, Bush 43, Obama, you know, it's been a polarized country. But the other thing I would tell you is,
well, I think when you try to impeach a when you impeach a president,
yeah,
you know, that maybe we are at a point where things have turned a new page.
It's hard to be invited to dinner at somebody's house while an impeachment is going on.
And meanwhile, his ratings still remain sky high.
Right, and I think that which is one of the things that led him out of it. But the I think in retrospect, people look more at the president's kind of personal, just their personal policies and the way they conduct themselves personally. And to be fair to Obama, he does not have a lot of the negatives of, you know, he doesn't have.
There isn't a scandal.
Yeah, there's no scandals. There's no drinking.
Personal scandals.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm sure the Fox News guys are saying, well, Benghazi's a scandal and this and that, but not you're right, not a personal scandal. Nobody on that level of personal integrity, he's very clean. I think what's interesting is, you know, when I grew up, when you talk about dishonesty, okay, and obviously you and I talked about this last time. We were talking about the whole, you know, if you like your health plan, you can keep it. Which I know you had an explanation for. You know, mine was different. I just think it was a lie. But when I grew up, the gold standard in lying was, and I'm older than you, but you know, was Nixon. Right. Yeah. Nixon, when we're talking about dishonesty, Nixon and the famous tapes and him saying on the tape, no, it is wrong. That's for sure. I mean, that really resonated. I think later people would look a little bit at George Bush 43 with the famous 16 words that were said, you know, at the at the United Nations, said by Colin Powell, but on the WMDs. Although I think in retrospect, that's being blamed more on Cheney. And the neocons and Bush is more of a sin of omission there. But I see the personal integrity thing, I think, is difficult. I think you talk about legacy. I think the Obama legacy, it's going to be really hard to get around that statement of the, if you like your plan, you can keep it. I think it's going to be difficult with Benghazi. I think it's going to be I don't think these are things that are going to wear well in the next 10 years. Now, if Obamacare somehow turns around and everybody loves it, that will be his legacy. But I think his legacy is already written, don't you?
No.
So what do you think happens in the next 2 years to change
it? And by the way, I don't mean that. I don't think anyone's legacy is written until, I think you have to time things out. I think things have to age a little bit, and you have to see, you're talking about a major plan and a major change in government. We don't know, look, this thing could be wrecked in the courts. It could be altered
and
changed.
It's going to be around forever.
I don't know that.
Yeah.
I don't know that.
Yeah.
I don't know that.
I'm trying to remember the last big government program that got shut down.
Or perhaps altered. I think the jury is still out on that. And I think there are many other things I don't think it is one issue. I don't think it's one issue that defines any president. I don't think it's one issue that defines any administration.
Well, but it is, Joe, because now sometimes the issues are really big. You know, Lincoln and the Civil War, Lincoln and slavery, right. And sometimes the issues are Lyndon Johnson. You know, who would go down as a great president to many people if it wasn't for a little thing called the Vietnam War, which. Not necessarily. It certainly got expanded on his watch, but wasn't necessarily his initial problem. But he's always going to be dogged with that. Nixon's always going to be dogged with his scandal. Carter's always going to be dogged with the economy. Ulysses Grant is always going to be dogged by the corruption of his administration, which pretty much everybody agrees he had nothing to do with. Right.
Yeah.
Adams is always going to be the Alien and Sedition Acts. I think especially in our culture, you pick one thing. We have room for one soundbite in our head, unfortunately.
Do I go there?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
You know, to me, there's a big difference between we screwed up on the launch of a website and clearly explaining how this works versus. We're gonna send young men and women to war that perhaps
you're talking about the WMD statement.
Yeah,
yeah, I understand. I think sending people to war is right. It's the most important thing you can do, and if you're doing that based on false pretenses,
it's scary as hell.
I think it is too. What I think is scary though is the attempts to justify. the healthcare statements. I mean, you say it's not the website, Joe. It's the guy said to the entire nation a million times, if you like your healthcare, you can keep it. He based his signature legislation on something that was wrong. Let me give you the definition.
No, I know. Yeah, I just don't want to rehash an old argument.
Right.
But go ahead.
But that's a big deal. And I think that no matter how he's viewed afterwards, it's going to be hard to. I think it's always going to be part of the legacy.
I would disagree with you on the magnitude. I certainly understand that there are things. I don't think we fully know exactly what happened, what's going to happen. I certainly think that there are disappointments there. But I'm just not ready to make a final grade.
And it's unfair to us. And you're right. It's unfair for us to do that yet.
Yeah.
That analysis really has to outlast not only him being out of office, but has to see how that program goes.
And, you know, we're still talking about a program. Let me just take my last shot. which is, you know, we're still looking at a program that went through so many different phases,
right.
through so many different litmus tests, if you will, including the Supreme Court. And came out to be something that was going to be adopted by this country, and if the law doesn't work, then you change aspects of the law.
Yeah,
is that an unfair argument?
Well, I think that's what they've been doing. I think it's clearly the law of the land. They've shown no compunction about changing the law of the land extrajudicially and extralegislatively, meaning non-legislatively to suit their purposes, which I actually think that's. That's going to be part of his legacy as well. Not just on healthcare, but I think you're going to see this more and more. We're seeing it now at state levels. The whole idea of people acting by executive fiat, right? We see that throughout the states.
Right.
We're seeing that at the national level, where people going about things through regulatory actions rather than through legislative. And I actually think when we look down the road, that'll be one of the legacies that he leaves us with for good or for bad.
I'm not making excuses for any politician, but I am perhaps positing the thought that isn't this somewhat human nature, that if you know you're gonna get battered and beat up, I don't care who we're talking about,
whether it's
Christie or President Obama or whatever the case may be, if you know you're gonna get beat up and banged up, and you want to get from point A to point B. And you say, okay, well, I can go this way, and I'm going to get battered in it. That you're going to look for an alternate route, and sometimes that route is proper, and sometimes that route is not proper.
Yeah, which is okay if you're an investment banker or a private person, but for that to be the credo.
I'm not saying it should be the credo.
No, but
I'm saying
you said the same thing last time too. You said, you know, and it still comes out to the ends justifies the means.
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that there is a degree of what I believe to be human nature in this. I think many people sum this up during the Clinton administration of saying, okay, well, it's different because we're talking about an affair. And he covered up a personal affair.
Right.
Okay, he still lied.
Right.
He lied.
Yeah.
You know, plain and simple, he lied.
Right.
Okay, so I did not have sexual relations with it.
Right.
Well, yes, you did.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
All right, you lied. So then we say, okay, well, now are we in a culture and a society where we're putting people up to this, where it's almost impossible to come out and say this is what we're going to do and not get just battered to death over any major change.
Well, first I would say to that what I say to the young associates in my law firm or something, or what I say to other folks when they're involved in things where they have to make big decisions under intense time pressures.
Yes.
I say, welcome to the NBA. Okay.
Well, sure.
Nobody made you take this job. Nobody made you run for this job. Nobody made you interview for the
job. But there are rules. I'm sorry.
And the minute you, as a president or as a leader in anywhere, the minute you start taking shortcuts, You've started us down the slippery slope. I'd remind you that Lincoln probably had a pretty big task in front of him too, and he didn't take many shortcuts.
I'm not saying that you take shortcuts, and I'm not. And if I'm not articulating that, I apologize. My point is, though, that even to use your NBA reference analogy, there are rules in the NBA, and you can foul out. Yeah. And there's a guy there with a whistle who's going to tell you did something wrong.
Right. And we don't have that guy. I agree with you.
You know, we don't have
we
that.
Need that guy.
We don't have that system. You can just get battered to hell, and we don't have the things of saying, okay, other than us, democracy, saying, okay, this is right, this is wrong, you're in, you're out.
Well, other than the press. The press is supposed to be that guy. Or that woman.
Why can't you trust us? Rich Honan is a partner in Phillips Lytle LLP, where he's partner in charge of the Albany office. For more information on the firm, you can visit their website, phillipslytle.com. Rich, it's always a pleasure to have you, rouse us all up. Rile us, that's it.
Rile us
all up, yes. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.